This podcast is brought to you by Electric Power Systems. EPS is a leading provider of high-power, scalable powertrains that are certifiable for electrified aviation. It develops energy storage systems, DC fast charging stations, and electric propulsion products for aerospace, defense, automotive, marine, and industrial traction industries. All right, welcome all our listeners today back with the Aviation Renaissance with Spencer and Spencer. We have an exciting episode today. We have Randy Dunn, co-founder of Electric Power Systems, on. And remember that EPS is our sponsor, and it is an exciting company to be a part of. So we want to bring Randy on and kind of have him share his experience of being a co-founder of this industry-leading company. So Randy, take it away.
Yeah, thanks, Spencer. Good morning. I guess I kind of want to talk a little bit about what got me into this business. And, you know, it goes all the way back to my childhood. I can remember being a little kid wanting to have one of those electric ride-on cars. And I don't know, I was always fascinated with electric propulsion from an early stage, but I really didn't re-engage with it until much later in life when I was coming back from a defense contractor where we were working on satellite testing, which is that's pretty cool technology,
yeah,
right? But my friend was telling me about a startup company, this is about 2007, who was doing electric cars using laptop batteries.
Oh.
It's like thousands and thousands of laptop batteries to propel an actual real car, and I thought that was really fascinating. And it just sparked something. And so we formed a team within the small company that had also co-founded back in the 90s and started doing exploring this whole battery thing in electric vehicles. We dove into motors. We started testing different types of batteries, lead acid even, but nickel metal hydride, but quickly realized that the industry was going in the right direction with lithium because there's nothing really compared to it. But it was kind of like taming the beast. And so there's a lot of power there, but a lot of danger. And so we started early on testing, you know, performance, cyclability, seeing what we can get out of it, and then safety. So we're blowing up batteries at an early stage and started building battery packs and battery management systems. And we thought we were pretty clever too. We'd done a lot of electronics for years for defense. We thought, yeah, we can handle this. It's like, and we're still learning, you know, and it's 15 years later. But the battery management system is an incredibly complicated thing. You're putting electronics on a very powerful, dangerous, noisy environment, and there's a lot of challenges associated with that. So we were able to make battery modules and battery management systems and started selling them to the military. And then one thing led to another through some handoffs of the company and the IP, and I met Nate a little bit later, a couple years later. And we were fortunate enough to work for a company that was just dumping a lot of money into this, a lot of R&D, to just play in the sandbox and experiment and talk to customers. And after we departed there, we co-founded Electric Power Systems. And we were fortunate enough that NASA came to us and needed a battery pack for the X-57 experimental electric airplane. And working with them was fantastic. It was kind of like having a partner, a mentor, and a funder all at the same time, enabling us to explore safer batteries for propulsion. And we got to work with their leads who had been doing this for many years for the space applications and doing general research and development. And they educated us. We educated them from our angle, what we had been doing. And together we created something new, I think, that set a new standard in the industry for electric propulsion, battery systems, and electronics. And then since then, we've been just kind of continuing to evolve that technology to make it better, safer, lighter, and lower cost, and more effective for more people.
Did you get the laptop batteries to work in the car?
We did.
Wow.
We did. Yeah.
Okay.
We did. We had one customer that was trying to be an EV startup. Unfortunately, like most of them, they didn't pan out. But they came to us. They were a golf cart manufacturer, and they wanted to step up to kind of medium speed electric vehicles. And we did build them a battery pack and drove it around at 60, 70 miles an hour on the streets of Los Angeles and freeways and experimented with it and learned a lot. Also, we built a motor, and we're not really doing much of the construction of the motors, electric power systems, but we know a lot about the motors. And I think that's important to understand the system, right? So you need to know how the motors work, how the batteries relate to them, and make sure that you're building something that's achieves the goals of all the propulsion system in general. But yeah, we did build electric car. We built some robotic systems. We put a battery in a tank to make it hybrid at 700 volts early on to reduce its thermal signature to make it a little more stealthy.
I completely understand that from my time in the military. You know, they'd be in overseas a lot and night vision and using thermal and FLIR and all that kind of stuff. And it's one of the things that'll give you away at nighttime is your heat signature.
Yep. And just being able to sit there and loiter quietly and have your electronics continue to operate. So the military has been very interested. And that, again, allows a growing moment for us where we had to work with the mil standards for tanks. We had to deal with ballistic impact shock and vibration, which is a whole other level. Even though I had done a lot of aviation and military aircraft systems, some of these ballistic shock impacts were such high degree that, you know, it forced us to kind of rethink how we package, how we weld packs and keep them, you know, operating even in that kind of environment.
I completely understand the welding. I did it for a year or so, and I did all different kinds to increase the viability of the pack to make it more robust to withstand shock and vibe, all that kind of stuff. It's interesting. I don't think people really realize what it takes to put a pack together.
No, in fact, we had a little story. We had a guy on our team, a younger guy, but he was a very good mechanical engineer. And he had come kind of out of the automotive industry. And he designed a pack for us. And we were cautioning him to make sure that he considered the vibration and the not only the G-forces, but the frequency. And he said, I do automotive. That stuff's really robust. We can do military aviation stuff. That's no problem. Every one of his battery straps flew off in vibration testing because he didn't understand the relationship between G-forces and frequency and the amplification of that. But the military, the aviation is another level of complexity in everything, in every aspect. Weight's more important. Vibration is much worse. Obviously, the criticality of thermal runaway is another level beyond because you, in aviation, you can't just pull over the side of the road and get out of the vehicle. And so we have always taken safety as our number one charter above all else. Cost, performance, everything is secondary to safety. And so that's why we've built now several blast labs. We've been blowing up cells because understanding the characteristics of a thermal runaway triggers how these things manifest into fire and heat and distribute that heat is really important to understand how to make a case around it and protect the vehicle and keep it from spreading and limit the damage if these thermal runaway events do occur.
So one question, and this is totally just for more knowledge. You hear shock and vibe a lot in our environment. Can you kind of give your explanation of like why shock environment is so important, and especially in like the aviation? You kind of touched on it a little bit, but kind of explain the shock and vibe to listeners so they understand a little bit more.
Yeah, well, shock is like a single impact, like hitting a hammer on something. Mm-hmm. That's challenging enough, but vibration is actually the worst. And mm-hmm. So anything that's moving is vibrating. And it is kind of an insidious thing. It seems like nothing. And maybe it's a small hum or whatever, but there are frequencies that resonate with the end item. Whatever you're building has a resonant frequency. And if those sync up, you get kind of like the Tacoma Bridge disaster, things like that. You get resonance. Mm-hmm. And so what looked like a solid bridge, as soon as you get an oscillation and a wind, it just destroys things.
Mm-hmm.
And
so I was in Washington for that.
Were you? Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that was quite an event. And yes. Watch that car flipping around on there.
Yep.
A lot of videos on that around to see. So vibration is the one that is, whenever I've built things in the past and we go into full what we call military testing, mil standard testing, which is temperature, shock, vibration, altitude, humidity, sand, all these things you think that something could be exposed to in the real world. And to the nth degree, because it's intended to give, in a very short period of time for efficiency, the full life of what you expect this thing to see in the real world. Mm-hmm. So what you might do in a day is equivalent to like 20 years on the field. So you're trying to find and make sure this thing's going to last. So that's what these tests were developed to explore. And vibration is the one that we always typically fail. Everything else is easy, but vibration is one you have even like semiconductors, chips will fly off boards if they're not secured correctly. Soldered down, they look good, but they fly off the board in vibration. You know, battery straps break, crack. The cells, even though you couldn't even see it, they're moving. They're in vibration. They're constantly oscillating between each other. And over time, those little oscillations result in tearing, cracks, breaks, whatever. And so you have to make sure that you've looked at that for the life of the product out in the field, what it's going to see, and then margin to make sure that, hey, you're not just on the edge of success, but you got plenty of margin for what-if scenarios in case something happens.
I know that one of the projects that I worked on in 2020, that was our biggest sticking point, was the anode and cathode tab coming out of a pouch cell welded onto a bus bar. And we had to reinforce the entire bus bar array because through the shock and vibe testing, we were getting those tears at the cell level, the tab coming up out of the cell, and where it makes its bend to be welded on is that was the fail point every single time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we test. I'm a huge fan of testing. There, you do as much as you can in simulation, and you use your experience. You can look up data and use that as part of your design criteria, but ultimately test is the best teacher and the best evidence that you've succeeded as well.
That's a good point. I know that they talk about doing a lot of de-risk testing on the computer through simulation, and quite often, more often than not, when they actually get in and do the test from their simulated de-risk testing, there's always something that pops up. Always something.
Yep, quite true. And even though EP Systems has invested heavily into personnel, training, and tools to do as much prediction and modeling as we can to make our designs as highly successful as possible. But yeah, ultimately testing is the final check in the box to make sure you've gotten there. And these tests are pretty extreme. And to iterate that quicker, we've also invested in the tools in-house so that we can do it locally. All of our testing is done in-house to validate our designs as fast as possible, to iterate on those designs, to fix problem, and to get a successful product out as quick as we can.
That is one of the things that I've noticed in our growth as a company there, because for a long time we were having to send it down to Ogden for testing or up to USU, the university's lab up there, to do testing, and that comes with a cost and time. And so being able to bring all of this stuff in-house lowers the cost overall, but it also shortens the time that it takes to get these built and out the door.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that the one that's the most critical has been our blast lab, what we call our blast lab. It's where we blow up cells, modules, and packs. And a few years ago, before EP Systems, when we had to do that, we were in Southern California and we had to go all the way to Elmsdorf, Texas. And, you know, think about taking all your equipment, personnel, going out there, setting up shop in a place that's really not set up for battery testing so much as just for explosive testing. So they were great to work with, the test lab we worked with, but it took a couple days just to prep. Then you run your tests, then you have to do your kind of breakdown and cleanup. So it's a full week at least to do one test. And the entourage of taking your team out there and coordinating all that, it would cost $50,000 to $75,000 per test. Wow. And you get just a couple in a year, right? You got budget, you got people being away, travel, getting into the test lab who's doing other testing, and they book up 4 or 6 months in advance. So our ability to iterate on our designs and fix problems is extremely slow. So one of the first things we did at EP Systems in 2016 was to set up a blast lab with, we were fortunate enough to be able to work with Utah State, and they had a facility where we modified it to support our blast lab needs. And that got us off the ground. That allowed us to start doing explosive testing immediately. But having it now on site on our own campus gives us more control. It's right there. All of our equipment's basically permanent. So we can just kind of walk out there in a day and just start doing stuff and collecting data quickly.
Even the change from the 2 years that I've been there, because when we were only at Hyde Park, there were times when we would be doing testing outside in an overturned dumpster, burning up batteries in the P people next door kind of thought that we were mad scientists.
Yeah, and we have to obviously be responsible with our equipment. So the proper filtration to make sure we're not dumping in the environment. You know, and being on campus at USU, you had students going by on skateboards and bicycles with no knowledge of what was going on right next to them, and it had to be completely silent. I mean, we had to make sure that nothing got out, right? So we worked with our health and safety folks to make sure we were doing the right things, making sure we're capturing particulate matter, make sure we were capturing that it was hot and might escape because cause a secondary fire. And we went through the analysis of all the gases released and make sure we captured and neutralized those appropriately. And that's what we carried into our own facility to, again, just to be responsible to the environment, to our own people, and to the folks around us.
So now this leads us to the question about the aviation renaissance. At what point did you see, because we obviously talked about the laptop batteries with the golf carts and the previous vehicles, and there's lots of experiments that I've heard about, but what has led you to just this honing in and just this hyper-focus on aviation and making propulsion batteries for the aviation industry?
Well, to be completely honest with you, it was like we had a lead rope on us, and the world just took us there. It wasn't like we had a master plan. We did work on a lot of different systems. Like I said, robotics. We did a battery system, high power battery system for a mobile CAT scan system.
Wow.
I was able to take CAT scan around the world to areas where they didn't have proper power or emergency situations where there was no power or stable power, and be able to treat folks and, you know, analyze their condition. So a lot of different applications we did, and some aviation, but aviation there was really just the starter batteries. So this is like 10 years ago, 12 years ago, aviation starter batteries for the jet engines. And it was really that experience in aviation that kind of got us admitted into the X-57 program. And because not a lot of people were doing aviation batteries at the time. They were really, and even the ones that were out there were lithium starter batteries. So when we first came across NASA's X-57 program, we were asked to quote on it. We did have a little bit of pedigree there with lithium batteries and in aviation, and that's what won us that project and our experience in aviation in general with our background in military and commercial programs. And that really opened up the whole door of electric aviation. It's like, oh, this propulsion aspect of electric aviation is interesting. And it opened up so many doors. So many different companies came to us because of that pedigree of working with NASA. And so we just kind of seized the opportunity, you know, and kind of, we still did work on some other systems early on, EP systems, but the opportunities were so big to engage and to make a difference in the world in this new space versus automotive. It definitely had a lot of momentum for quite a while now.
Right.
Everybody's going that way. We're not really a group. We didn't have an automotive background. We weren't engaged in that industry, even though we'd done some electric cars and some things like that. But our aviation background, coupled with the new opportunities in the X-57 programs, kind of set the stage for this.
Wow.
So you're still in Southern California, right?
That's correct, yeah. Los Angeles area.
All right.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought to make a move up here to Logan, or you like California too much?
It's not that I like California too much. This is a beautiful state, and I love it. And I think it's a really good place for our company. It is probably one of the best places for our company. But I had kids in school, and they were just entering high school a few years ago. Still got a couple in high school, and you know, it was a hard decision, but we ended up staying just due to the connections that our family had there with our family in general, a larger family, and then the friends of our kids. So it was kind of a personal decision.
Sure. But yeah. You have a son up at USU now, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah. My son Bryce at USU, going into some sort of engineering. We'll see what type. General engineering right now. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, he's exploring that.
So what do you see for the future of EPS right now?
Well, I think that it's kind of holding on to the reins and going with it. There's just an incredible amount of opportunity, so many engagements. Now we got to make sure that we focus on making the best batteries, the safest batteries. We can't deviate from our charter and our roots and safety. And I think even though there's a lot of opportunity and it's exciting, and there's the interest to grow fast and to get a lot of product out there, and our customers really want a lot of product. We need to stay focused on safety and making the absolute most robust products we can. I think the company has come so far in the last 6 years. You know, we really have gotten to a level of confidence where our battery management system just works, right? It just works. Our batteries work. Early on, issues that we saw years ago have just completely gone away. We've put in manufacturing techniques, checks and balances, and it's really amazing. So we are producing, you know, world-class products, and now it's just a matter of scaling it up and keeping that same attention to safety and quality that we have always done, but being able to scale it up to production and eventually, hopefully, to mass production to meet customer needs in this growing industry.
We have several of our modules of different designs on many different types of aircraft, from fixed wing to eVTOL to there's automotive stuff. And to my understanding, we still have a perfect safety record.
Yeah, I believe so. I believe that's the case, yeah. So we've done our job, our due diligence there. As things get fanned out and get into more production, we want to keep that, right? So we're hoping that these routes that we're setting up now take hold and result in having us ability to keep that safety record even when we go to high volume and get these things distributed. But you bring up a good point. It's like one of the challenges for EP Systems is a battery system or energy storage system developer and producer versus maybe an aircraft manufacturer is making their batteries, is they get to focus on one aircraft, one battery, one goal. We have had to deal with a lot of different goals, a lot of different power profiles, weight, installation, profiles, volume, space. We've had to deal with so many different things. And I think that was one of the biggest challenges that we had, was to try to make something that could fit all these needs. And we don't have like one size fit all, but we got a couple sizes fit most out of this. And I think that's unique to us in our situation with having dozens of customers and as you said, fixed wing, vertical takeoff and other things in between and variants and all that, and different types of power and hybrid as well as all electric, mm-hmm. which is very different. The cells are very different. And that's been both a challenge and also puts us in a beneficial position, because we've seen so many things. It's given us a better vision of the overall landscape, and something we may have learned on one type of application could apply to another, even though they're very different. It still may apply. Something we learned over here applies over there. And I think that's made us a greater, more overall well-rounded energy storage system supplier than if we were just squarely focused on one system for one specific target application.
So at what point did you, and I know this was a group effort, but you know, at EPS, it's the EPIC product line, right? Mm-hmm. As you talk about, we have a few options that serve most customers. At what point did that start to come to fruition that you realized, hey, wait a second, there is something we can do here to meet these different voltages and energy and power requirements?
Yeah, so like a lot of people, probably 15 years ago, we were making modules of various types of voltage and current to do this. So it came early, even before the founding of EP Systems, that we recognized that as a benefit. Mm-hmm. But I think that we didn't do the best job in the world back then. And EP Systems, again, we started with just a few customers, and we were very focused on their needs, mm-hmm. and getting them off the ground. Most people were doing prototypes, proof of concepts. They just wanted something that worked. They wanted it quick. We didn't have a lot of time to really kind of consider everybody. We had to consider that one customer, make sure that their needs were being met. But then after about a year, year and a half of that, so maybe like 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, we were getting pulled in so many directions and designing so many custom unique solutions. We said, we're not going to grow this way, and we're not going to do a good job for our customers, because every time it's unique. And so when you start with not clean slate, but almost a clean slate design each time, you're going to make mistakes each time. But if you make one thing and you iterate on it and you get all the bugs and all the issues worked by reusing that and selling it to this person, that application, then you really do start to hone it in and refine it and get it perfected. So we decided about several years ago, we need to make we need to look at the entire landscape of all our customers. We already had like 10, 15 customers. It's like canvas the field. So our folks looked at all the different use cases, and then we boiled it down to just a few different configurations. As few as possible, but we end up being more than one. And for hybrid, all electric, and different sizes, voltages, also vertical takeoff versus fixed wing. And we came up with the Epic product line. And that allowed us to get it down to a level where we could just focus on a few things, get those designs iterated, perfected, and yet still meet the needs of most of the industry. There's still going to be some outliers on occasion, and we'll have to deal with those. But this allows us to get high volume on a single group of products across a large landscape. And that gets us to scale faster too. So not only is it a better product, more refined, but it gets us higher numbers of a fewer set of products. So that even though there may be four customers buying this exact product, any one of them may not be high volume. But when you get four of them together, your volumes start to amplify. And that allows us to provide not only a better product, but a lower cost product, a more sustainable product for our customers.
I think also going along the line of a standard product in the three different variations that we have, to make it certifiable, we have to go through the FAA. And the certification process through them is very stringent and rigid, and it only helps us perfect our designs more to work out all of those bugs and those kinks. So we know that we're putting the best product forward that can be certified, that is certified, that goes to a customer.
Yeah, absolutely correct. And the FAA is maturing in with us and other industry players like us. We're all growing up together in this new world. And we actually have been fortunate enough to have contracts with the FAA for the past several years to define test methods and help them understand what we're doing so they can help define the requirements and the certification strategies and approaches to getting a safe product out there into the community. And that relationship's been fantastic because they've been very supportive. We've worked with FAA and EASA both to help to refine these strategies. So, ultimately, if you're making a modular approach that's going to be reconfigured for different customers, that's a challenge for them because they like to have things designed specifically and fixed. And here we come with this kind of like bag of tricks. So we're going to put different configurations of voltages, and they're like, okay, this is a challenge. So we're having to overcome again another hurdle or set of hurdles beyond an airframer who's dealing with their own batteries. They're saying, hey, I'm designing this battery pack. It's going to go this plane. It looks like this. Exactly. It's always going to be that. And we're like, oh, we got all these different configurations. And this one is that way. And this one's that way. Can we certify the core? Can we have to certify the whole system? How's that going to look? And we're still working that out with them, actually. We've got our first certification programs going through with them. And we'll define a lot of that. And then it'll continue to evolve over the next few years as we expand to other type of aircraft and other systems and other configurations.
The Aviation Renaissance isn't just a catchy name for the podcast. It truly is a renaissance, even with the FAA. It's a massive change in the way that they look at things and deal with things. And moving into the future, we're at the forefront setting the standard for the rest of the world.
Yep. You know, I'd say it's similar to the automotive electric renaissance, but I think that the automotive renaissance was more with perception. There was the range anxiety issues and just kind of breaking the mold of an old industry. But electric cars have been around for a long time, right? When we first started getting into this in electric car business, I realized all the first cars were electric back in the early part of the 1900s. Porsche had an electric car back then, and it just was gas just took over. But so I'd say the technological challenges were less. It was more of an industry movement to just make it happen, and the volumes were needed, and a price. It was a price concern. Mm-hmm. But aviation, it's a lot more technical challenges, and obviously range is a huge problem and will be a huge problem for quite some time with electric travel or alternative energy travel. And the certifications that come with it make it much more challenging from a technical perspective to build an electric aircraft versus electric car, I think. maybe not the nuts and bolts of just making something move, but when you get into the safety and certification aspects, that's what differentiates us, I think, from the automotive industry. And truly, yes, it is a renaissance because, you know, there's just nothing, I think, like making an electric aircraft as something that has that kind of range and safety and power and performance needs. It really is truly unique where we're at. And it's never really had even any history of electric in the past.
No, agreed. That great, great last statement. So any final thoughts here as we wrap this up, Randy? I mean, anything else you'd like to share? You kind of just honed in on the aviation renaissance, but when listeners think of EPS, what do you want them to think about?
Well, I guess it's taming the dragon, right? This is lithium battery has so much potential, but the industry needs to go cautiously because having an event or problems is going to set us back a lot. So that's why I'm really proud of where our company is and how much we're focused on safety and testing of these thermal events. We see the cells as getting more dangerous as things go forward, actually. As the energy densities get higher, it seems like they're getting more violent, more difficult to control. And so while that's a need and a desire to make them lighter and smaller, it does come with increasing challenges and risks. And so we want to do great things, but it needs to be tempered with keep an eye towards safety. And as a group, I'm hoping that everybody keeps that in mind and focused in the future as we do.
Awesome. We appreciate you being on, Randy. It's really the first time I've had an opportunity to sit down and actually talk to you and get to know you, but it's been a good conversation. Thank you for coming on.
Nice being here. Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Electric Power Systems. EPS is a leading provider of high voltage, high power, certifiable electric power systems for high reliability applications. Its mission is to power transportation's electric renaissance by providing smarter, safer, more reliable, lighter, and certifiable batteries.